June 11th, isn't it?
Monday,
Yeah,
June 11th.
Monday, June 11th. This is a recording with Frank Tanner as our subject. We're going to have Frank go back over the City of Alliance from the year 1900 and give us his story about Alliance, and especially on East Main Street. Now, Frank, let's go back to the early beginnings of the Tanners and try and get this get us straight about the family. Go back as far as you can. We know your dad was born in Switzerland. And then did they all come over together? That is August and now.
Yeah, there was my granddad, William Tanner, and his family come over here. Then there was another family from there, from Basel, Switzerland. Another Tanner family come over at the same time. They were cousins of my granddad, his cousin. And they come over here with the idea that they would go to Cincinnati, Ohio. They had studied about a little bit about the United States. So they went to Cincinnati, Ohio, and lived there only a short while, and it, they were a little disappointed in the way things were in the light there. So my granddad, with his family, come to Alliance, Ohio. And the other Tanner, his cousin and their family, went from Cincinnati out to Kansas City. And my granddad then, shortly after he came to Alliance, well, he lived at Alliance for quite a little while, and they at that time, there was a lot of people come from Switzerland into Ohio, settled in Ohio, a lot of them. And they started the what they called the Swiss Singing Society several places around the state. And they had these singing societies get together every year and have contests they would. So my granddad, in the meantime, he was interested in that. So my granddad, in the meantime, decided to build this place down here, which they called a the Castle Nightclub at now.
What was your grandfather's name?
William.
He was William.
William Tanner.
William Tanner. Mm-hmm. And your dad's name was Emil.
Emil. E-M-I-L-E. Emil, they call
him. Emil.
Emil.
Uh-huh.
E-M-I-L-E.
And August Tanner. Is your dad's brother.
Yeah, he was the oldest brother, and then there's another one, William Tanner. There were three boys, and then one girl in the family, and her name was Urich, Sarah Urich. She was Aunt Sarah Urich. Three boys and a, well, now
he married a Urich.
There's another boy. My grandmother died, then my grandfather married again and had another boy, Carl Tanner.
And Carl then was the son from the second marriage.
That's right.
Oh.
Carl Tanner.
I never could always get that quite straight. Now I'm getting you someplace.
Three boys and a girl in the first marriage and then one boy in the second is what the family had.
In the story in the Alliance Review about your dad during the 1950s, that gave his biography, it said that he came from Switzerland and that they had to make a trip. I think they walked across France, or they got across France. It took them 2 days to get there. And then they said they came to New York, and they were there for a couple of years. Did they go from New York to Cincinnati then, do you think, or they
well,
just...
Well, their idea when they came to New York was to go to Cincinnati.
Oh,
they
I see.
They stayed at New York quite a little while before they went on to kind of get acclimated to the country and the like. And they instead of going to Cincinnati and staying there, they did go to Cincinnati, then they spread out. One family went west and his family come east.
Well, it
now,
said
the family that went west, the Tanner there, he finally got in the wholesale grocery business. The largest wholesale grocery there was in the country. He took care of everything west of the Mississippi River. And it got to spread out and got very, very big. And
he was very successful then in that
very
enterprise.
Very successful. And then I might tell you this, one of the biggest Mormon fellows in the Mormon church is a fellow by the name of Tanner there that was considered here a couple of years ago to be ahead of the Mormon when this one died, and then he wouldn't take it because he was too old, he said, and they put somebody else in. But that Tanner is from this outfit that he's from the other Tanner outfit that come from Basel at that time and went out there, and it, with the one that went into the grocery business. He's a son of that, grandson of the fellow that started the grocery business out there, this fellow that's in the Mormon. I've met him. I've talked to him. And I got the whole Mormon setup thrown in my lap to see everything out there. Account of me being I had a personal tour of everything out there.
In the paper, in 1950, it talked about your dad coming to Alliance, and that he stayed with his mother's sister, that is his brother-in-law, in a log cabin that was on Main Street at the time. Do you,
that's right,
you remember that story like that?
Oh, I heard that story, yes, about yeah. that. They did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, did your dad go to work for the K's right away, or did he work other places before he went to work for K's Hardware?
Well, that's the first job he took. Mr. K, he married a canteen girl, and Mrs. Canteen was a wealthy family. That was the most wealthy family in Alliance.
Well, Canteen and K at one time were together, and then I suppose K took on afterwards, maybe after Mr. Canteen died or something
because Mrs. K was the only child.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so she inherited all that, see, and Mrs. K did. That's where K got his finances and stepped up like thunder was from his wife.
Well, your dad worked for him about 30 years or so.
Oh, yeah. Dad, he worked in the grocery store and stuff like that when he was younger. And when he got up higher, he started in right away at K's Hardware Store. That's where he worked in that from the beginning when they started. That was his main line of business, was K's Hardware Store. And after Mr. K died, the two girls, or I guess there was three girls, the K girls, still kept the store, but Dad was in charge of it. And a lady that was the bookkeeper and the like, she was there all this time. She was a real, her name was, Dad and her were the two ones that was with the K's Hardware all the time. Learmonth, Jenny Learmonth.
Oh, yeah.
She
was on the class of 1878 that we have down at the museum.
Yeah. Jenny Learmonth. She was the bookkeeper at the K's Hardware all her life, I guess. Spent all her life there. Yep. Well, between her and my dad, they kept K's Hardware going, see. Now, K, when he owned it, he done no work there. He used that there for a kind of a meeting place of all the businessmen in town. I think the Alliance Business Men's Association must have started there and the like. But they come in there, see, they were open every night. In the back of the store, as you went back to the store about three-quarters of the way back, you went up about four steps, and the back end was higher. And then they had a railing on one side, and they had a desk there where Jenny Lerman done her bookkeeping work and all that and the like. And then there was a table behind that with about six or eight chairs around that, and that's where Ben Weibrich and all these here businessmen and the like, and it would accumulate there every night because the store was open every night. And I used, Mother used to take us down, or sometimes she let us walk herself down to, in the evening to the store, and we'd get in there maybe half hour or an hour before the store closed, and we could, we could get an ice cream cone in the confectionery on the corner there. What was that guy that runs?
Was it Barnum's?
Huh?
Was it Barnum's?
No. Anyway, they had peanuts there, and they used to...
Well, maybe that was Martin's, right?
Yeah, that's
right
Martin's
on the corner, on the big, round building.
We'd go down there, and we'd get a sack of peanuts one time, or popcorn the next, and we'd go down there, and then we'd wait till Dad and come walking home with Dad in the evening. So we done that. We lived on South Liberty at that time, or I mean South Freedom at that time.
What was your mother's maiden name?
Seidel.
Seidel.
Lucinda Seidel. She's from Shreve, outside of Worcester, Ohio.
When you know what their marriage date was?
Oh my golly.
Well, it's not important. In this article, it told what her name was, but it didn't tell her when she was married. Were they married here, Alliance, or down there where he came from?
Where she was from, by Worcester. She's
outside
of Worcester.
I see.
Just west of Worcester, Shreve is. Yeah, she would come from a family over there.
Brother Ralph was the oldest one, and then you twins, or is that the way it was?
Yeah, Ralph was about 15 months older than us, over a year, about a year and a quarter older than the twins.
All right.
The home and I.
And what was your sister's name now?
Martha.
Martha. Uh-huh. And she is about a couple years younger than you?
She was 7 years younger than him and I. She's quite a bit younger than me.
Well, that's got the family. Now, you might tell that your dad had a bad accident when he went to work for the Alliance Machine. At that time, he lost his hand or his arm or something like that.
Yeah, he was their electrical man down there. He went down there for the Alliance Machine, and they used to have, you know, motors setting up on top of the machines with belts running them, and at that time, a lot of them. And something happened to the belt. That was it. So he went in there and he threw the switch box over on a column, see it throw the juice off, and fixed this belt, and they had a little bit of a kind of a screen thing around it to keep the man from getting in it. And he was in the process of putting that together, and the guy that run the machine reached over and turned the switch on, and this darn belt started and caught his arm and pulled his arm in there, and it ripped his arm, so they had to amputate it.
Yeah, those dangers. I worked myself in a shop that had those throw things, and always scared the life out of me when we were throwing those things. I always thought they were awful dangerous.
Yeah, well, this fellow that done that, I forget his name now. I knew it all the time. He had no business to do that. He wasn't even supposed to monkey with that. The electrician was to throw the switches on and off. They weren't supposed to do that, but he wanted to get it going and go over and shove it, and Dad didn't have this and it started around and grabbed his arm right away and pulled it in there. And Homer and I, Dad was working out there in the shop, and Homer and I were up in engineering office, and that happened. One of the fellas come running up there and told us, and we went down and was with Dad. And went with him when they took him up to the hospital and the like, and the two of us made the decision they had amputated his arm, which was all ripped. It was in awful shape.
Well, the company then later sent him out to a place to get an artificial arm.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
But the story, the way I read it too, was that he got so good using his other arm that eventually he threw the old wooden arm out. Is that right? Well, that was quite an accident. It happened like that.
Oh, he just was no time until he could use that arm. Just as everybody in town admired him, they'd stop and have him show him how he could use it and the like. And
yeah, that's the way the story told it, that he got so good with that he didn't even bother with the old wooden arm.
Definitely.
Uh-huh. Well, let's go back now to you were living there on Freedom, like this drawing that you showed me there, and that was a very interesting drawing there with a monkey pen that's part of it. And how far can you remember back? That was it before you went to school, or
when we lived there?
Yeah, when you lived down there on Freedom.
Yeah, we were just kids, weren't in school yet when Grandpa had the playground for us. We weren't up in school yet at that time. We were just. I suppose Grandpa had done that. We was around about 2-3 years old when he first fixed that place up, a little play place there for us.
And that was something unusual to have a pen with three monkeys in it. That, I bet all the kids in the neighborhood were had to come in and look at that.
He wouldn't allow us to let the kids in there, but we could go in.
Oh.
And but other kids could come, and our playmates around there, different kids, the Reader kids that lived across the street there, and I forget who they are. There's a number of them right around that area. We bring them kids in there to play, but they weren't allowed to go with Grandpa. Wasn't allowed to go in the monkey cage.
Yeah.
In fact, he told us not to go in herself while we had other kids there, just and then they wouldn't want to go in. Mm-hmm. But I can remember that. But we, Homer and I, we used to, we'd go in there and we'd stay in there half an hour or so, play with the monkeys, and we always would take some little thing for them to eat and feed them, and and they'd grab, and this here kind of a imitation of a tree they had in there. I don't know what they made it out of, and I know it was made down the Barbrick's lumber yard. This, like a tree, it was made in there to put in it, see, for the monkeys to go up on and play around. And there was a swing in there. They get on the swing and swing around.
The lot had a high board fence all the way around the property then.
There was a high board fence, pretty as high as this room, I believe, around there. And I had heard one time that Grandpa done that, account of the window being open and the light from the bar, which is in the back there, killed the view from seeing in there and the like. And that's what I'd heard, that he had done that, and it didn't bother the neighbors down that way. And like the lady that lived right next across the alley from August Tanner's there, and them people, if they was out in their yard and hadn't been for that high board fence, they could see the back windows in the back end of the bar, which is in there. So that was, I was told that heard that, see. Now, one of the things when Homer and I got bigger, around before we got into high school, was in grade schools and the like, but we spent every Saturday morning for Grandpa, which he'd pay us for, was to bottle liquor.
Oh, yeah. That's a good story. Go ahead and tell them that.
Well, you see, Grandpa, he had this saloon there, but at that time, T.A. Blue had a liquor distillery place. He bought the liquor by the carload lots from the distilleries out at Moline, Illinois. Is it somewhere out in Illinois there where all the distilleries was whiskeys? And he'd buy this barrels of whiskey from them. Blue got a whole carload a lot of the time. And saloons like Grandpa had, they'd buy barrels of whiskey. And whiskey at that time, the biggest sale of whiskey was by half pint or pint bottles. So Grandpa would get them bottles, and we had this great big round table down in the basement. It set up about, I'd say 2 feet from the floor. And one Saturday, Homer and I'd go down there, and we'd wash all these bottles out. The next Saturday, we'd go down, and we'd take a barrel of whiskey, and we had a beam up in the ceiling there. We had a little hoist thing that we'd hook the barrel on, but we'd take and knock the plug out of the side of the barrel of whiskey, the side plug, and we had a big plug we put in there that had four rubber tubes in it that went down in the barrel of whiskey, and then we'd raise this whiskey barrel up near the ceiling, and that left two tubes for each one of us, and then we would suck through, and Grandpa would always warn us, now don't get any of that liquor in your mouth, you'd get it running. And then we'd pay, all we had these here bottles to fill with whiskey around this here big table there. And Homer and I each had two tubes, and we'd put them down in there and let the liquor run till the bottle was filled up. And we'd pinch the tube and pinch this rubber tube and pick it out and set it in the next bottle. And we'd bottle that whole barrel of whiskey up there. Then we would go around and put the corks in. All they had was corks in them. And then they had a little piece of paper that told what kind of whiskey it was that we'd taste on the side of it, see. Now, we used to do that for Grandpa. And that was one of the jobs that we would do. About every 2 weeks we would do that. Sometimes maybe not quite that often, but generally maybe a Saturday, or sometimes maybe just in the evening, a couple days before Saturday, we'd wash these bottles out, get them all cleaned up and everything. And that's what we'd done for a long time. And Grandpa, he paid us well for that. I don't remember. We had all a little. We could go uptown at night, you know, and the stores was open. We could go in, and we could go into the movies or something like that, or we could go into get a sack of popcorn or stuff at the Martin's grocery or store on the corner up there, where we would buy stuff like that, you know, and eat it. And but Grandpa always, I think Homer and I was the two kids in town that had the most money to do that, and it's because we done these jobs for Grandpa down there.
Well, let's go up to the time when you first started the school. Where did you start the school at?
First grade. The school was in Seneca. We lived on South Freedom at that time. We went to Seneca for, I think it was 2 years to Seneca. Then we went to North Franklin.
Was Professor Wary the principal down there when you went to start the school?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And who was at Franklin? Do you remember the principal? But Mamie Farley was one of the teachers that was at North Franklin for a long, long time. I don't.
We were only down to Franklin. I think we only went to Franklin. No, wait. We just went there a year. Not a year. We went in there for the school had started that year and finished that year. Then the next year,
they sent you to Park and Broadway then from
Franklin? No, we moved over to we went to Park and Hester.
Oh, that'd be the North Park School then.
North Park School.
At the old Union. Of course, it wasn't a Union
Wait a
school.
Minute. We done that instead of going to Franklin.
Oh,
I
see. Going
to put us in Franklin, that is. We didn't go to Franklin
School. Oh, I see. Then they
we went to North Park School.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was the way it was.
Uh-huh.
Then later on, when we moved, we went to North Park School for a couple of years, and we had the two sisters, Mary and Martha Hazen, were the teachers there.
Oh, yeah.
And then we moved down to North Freedom, or North Liberty. And when we moved to North Liberty, that's when we were supposed to go to Franklin School. But the school that we went to was full of kids. All the seats were taken in that grade. So we still had to go over to Park and Hester, the school,
yeah,
from way down there.
Oh, that was quite a long walk, yeah.
Yeah, and we done that for 3 years. We took clear up to when we went to high school, we went over there that walk, because every day, every year when that year was up and started, why that school was filled up with the same kids there. We didn't get them, we had to go over there. Then when my sister Martha, when the year we were in the eighth grade over there, was her first year in school. So she wasn't going to go to school because she couldn't go to the school where the twins were going. And she put up such a howl, she wouldn't go. She just sat down and she wasn't going to go to school. That she was going to go when the twins was going. Well, she was supposed to go down there. But she put up such a howl, and they couldn't get her to go to school. And Dad said something that the principal, or the Mr. K at that time, was head of the Board of Education, he was. And, I forget who was the school superintendent. Anyway, they used to meet there in Case Hardware back up in that for all these businessmen and the like. And they found out about it, so they had... Dad took my sister, Martha, up to there to talk to the school superintendent.
That was probably Morris, wasn't it?
Yeah, Morris.
John Morris, yeah.
And they talked to him, and she put up such a howl that they agreed that she could go over to Park School. So she went there, and she's just a little kid. And that winter, we hauled her back and forth on a sled every day, Homer and I did, going over to school. But She stayed there. She finally, when we got through school over there, then went to high school. Why, she agreed, she went down to Franklin then. She transferred over. But for a couple of years, we had to take her back and forth. She wasn't going to go to school. She couldn't go to the building where the twins was. And she was a little stubborn kid. You couldn't get her to think otherwise.
But
it worked out all right.
Well, then you started the high school at the old college building then. It was still 1 year there.
Alliance College building. We went up there for freshman year, clear up on the third floor at the rooms off of where they had the auditorium on the third floor and the like. We went there for a freshman year. We come back on our second year, sophomore year, and we only went to school 1 week when the back wall was trembling of that building, and the stairs, the flooring of the different, wasn't tied onto the back wall because it was kind of open space with open stairs going up, for the other.
That's when they condemned the building.
They condemned the building, the state did. And so we didn't have any, we only went our second year in high school, we only went 1 week. And then it was condemned, and while they were setting up everything, they made in the basement of the library, they had a couple school rooms. The freshmen going into high school went there. The older classes, they fixed it over Park and Broadway. We went there, but they had to move all them kids out and the like, so We didn't go to school till after Thanksgiving. All we done, like Homer and I, athletes, all we done, we went up to Mount Union College and practiced football in the fall, and half the kids from school were up there watching us in the afternoons. That's all they had to do, you see. So we did play, our football team played, but we wasn't going to school till after Thanksgiving, while we got it all set up to go over Park and Broadway. So we went over there for 2 years while they were building a new school building, and the class I was in, the 1912 class, was the first class that graduated out of that building there. So that's my history in school. In that area of time.
Well, right here, I'm going to put this on the tape, that Frank and Homer are in the Alliance Hall of Fame in the sports section.
Yeah, yeah, we're in the Hall of Fame. We are, and
well, let's go on now.
I get
to
that. I was over to the high school here about a month ago. What was it they had over there? This music study club, you know, they had this.
The place where Mr. Purcell offered to send you to college, but you decided to take an apprenticeship instead of the college training.
Yeah, Mr. That's right. And so we. We both were leaving our classes in mathematics and stuff like that, and we wanted to be engineers, take an apprenticeship in engineering, and Mr. Purcell, he would like to send us to Mount Union College, and then also down here, Mr. Coates, who was a graduate of Amherst College in the East. One of his close friends that graduated was the gentleman was head of the Standard Oil Company in New York, the headquarters part of the Standard Oil Company. And
this was Hallam Coates then.
Yeah, Hal Coates.
Hal Coates.
So this man got in touch with him. He'd like to have two real good athletes who were good students. He wanted to send them to Amherst College. He owed the college something, and he thought if he could get a couple, like Hal Coates was telling about Homer and I being good students and also outstanding athletes in all the different sports, he tried to get us to go to Amherst College. And he'd call us at home, and for one time, right before we graduated, for 2 weeks straight, every around about 5:30 in the evening when we were home eating, he called us every night, and before school started that fall, and tried to talk us into going to Amherst. He would pay all our expenses, our trips back home and up there and the like in the summertime or vacation time, and he just wanted to go all out, but we turned him down. We had a chance. Mr. Purcell then told us that if we wanted to start the apprentice engineer's Alliance machine, he'd see if we started right away. Should I go right on now?
Yeah, we're okay.
We graduated from high school on Friday, June the 7th, and on Monday, June the 10th, we started to work as Alliance Machine as apprentice in the engineering department, and we were happy at that, and we started in at 9 cents an hour for the first 6 months, 12 cents an hour for the second 6 months, 16 cents an hour for the second year, 20 cents an hour for the third year, with a guarantee that you get 25 cents an hour when you were through your time. But we never got that because We got 35 cents an hour. When we were through our time, that was the highest rate that was paid through the shops at that time. Engineering, machinists, or what, all the rates, 35 cents was the highest rate per hour. So we got that right off the start.
I hope a lot of young people get a chance to listen to this now.
Yeah.
I thought I started cheaping up at 60 cents an hour, but when I heard your story, well, I realized, of course, those days eggs were a lot cheaper, bread was a lot cheaper, living was a lot cheaper.
Yeah. 5 cents or 10 cents for bread, a small loaf for 5 cents, and a large one for 10 is not at that time.
But a lot of young fellows starting out in life now, well, listen to that, but we'll hardly believe it, but this is something solid that, in the times that we lived in.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
I might say, you got that on?
Yeah.
At that time, you know, now we were very active in things, and baseball in Cleveland was a big thing up there. I go to baseball league in Cleveland, and Homer and I were very interested in that. And they played up there in the old league park at that time, a little ways off to 55th Street. And we, even with our apprenticeship wages that we were getting, we went up to Cleveland quite often to see ball games. We did on Saturdays. We'd go up and we could get a train out here in the morning up to Cleveland, and we'd go up and get off the 55th Street station, walk over to 66th Street where the ball field was. We'd see a ball game in Cleveland, walk back over and come back on the evening train, what they call the Cleveland and Pittsburgh local that come down. It left Cleveland around about somewhere about 5 or 5:30, somewhere around. We got back to Alliance about 6 or 6:30 in the evening. We'd done that a lot. Now we'd done that with our wages that we were getting at the Alliance machine, and we had very close friends that was in Mount Union College team at that time that played football, and they played at University of Michigan or Michigan State every year. We'd go up to Cleveland with and see them. We saw all them games that some of these same age people that were playing in Mount were good friends of ours. And we used to go and see the Michigan or Michigan State game. We'd go up to Cleveland and on the night train from Alliance, in the evening train, and get a boat from Cleveland. Take a night boat from Cleveland over to Detroit. We'd sleep in a berth in a boat. And we get off over at Detroit and go up to either wherever he's going, to Ann Arbor or to University of Michigan or Michigan State. We'd take a train up there and we'd see the football game. Then we come back on the next night, Sunday night we come back. And a lot of times at that time, when they was through the time when they were starting these hot stove league baseball games in Cleveland, and in the fall, some of the championship games are going at Edgewater Park, or at the park up there in Cleveland. I forget what it was. It was this where they had this kind of dome around it they'd set, where they had the big, large crowds in. And we'd come back generally then in the fall from a football game up in Cleveland, come back on the boat that night, maybe stay that Sunday afternoon and go out to... Oh, I can't think of the name of the park where they used
to... Euclid Beach, maybe?
No, it wasn't Euclid Beach. It was on the west side there. It was kind of a natural park. You could sit around on the bank and the like, and they had large crowds there. We saw some of them games on our way back home. We'd come in Sunday on the boat back into Cleveland. We'd stay there and see a ball game, come back down to Alliance on the evening train.
I believe you told me once that softball started in Cleveland.
Oh yeah, softball started in Cleveland. And that's when I was, we had baseball leagues in Alliance here. We had shop leagues and the like. And I was picked for the man to go up to Cleveland. I went up two different Saturdays. I did up to Cleveland and watched him play softball and got the system information on how they worked their softball teams, and they had shop leagues and the like up at Cleveland, independent leagues and the like, of playing softball. And I went up two different weekends to see and get the information and come back with the rules and the like, and we organized a shop league here playing softball.
That's real interesting.
Yeah.
There. I wanted to ask you a question. When you're talking, did the railroad companies back in those early times, I guess, run special excursions up to the ballpark sometimes, like on a Sunday or something like this?
Oh, yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. You could get they had special prices. You'd get it for about half what the regular fare was to go in them.
Did you ever see Cy Young play baseball?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Oh, definitely did.
Oh, that.
I saw Cy Young play several times.
I only got a chance to see him once when the Little League started in Minerva. They brought him down and let him throw a ball across there, and I will never forget this. And he was well up in his years then, and he threw a strong ball right across the plate. And that started the Little League down at Minerva.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Cy Young. Homer and I got introduced to him several times. He remembered us, because we was twins, you know, and so we were acquainted with him.
Even in his older days, they got him up on the stage a lot of times to talk. And although he was somehow of a hearing, he still went ahead and
he
enjoyed us. He died shortly after this one.
Yeah, they got him different times to go to places.
Well,
and not only you're getting talked about, we used to have the old rink here where we played basketball, which was one of the outstanding basketball places in this part of the country, you know. And
was that
we had a shop league here that played in the old rink, and this was
was that down on Prospect Street, that rink,
mm-hmm.
where the old, I think you maybe had the armory there at one time. Was that the Buick Garage afterwards, that same place you're talking about on Mechanic?
So. Or? It was on Mechanic there, right through. You went back the alley between. The two buildings are down there now, that you go back an alley, and there's a parking lot back in there next to the Christian Church and the like.
Oh, yeah, that must be the same place we're talking about.
Just right east of where that parking lot's where this old rink was.
And oh,
played basketball. We had a shop league, played back basketball there two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursday nights. Every week through the winter, we had a shop basketball league that played there, and it had a crowded house every time. It was a place for people to go and see their teams and back them up and the like. And
the Barnes Auditorium was a little later on. You didn't play
Barnes
in it.
Auditorium. We played a few games, not the league, no league games up there. We played into some men. That was down on North Arch.
Yeah, the high school used to play one season or two seasons. They played down at Barnes's before Memorial Hall was built. Then later on, they went up to Memorial Hall and played their games.
Yeah.
Then, of course, I believe, though, when I was in school between 1926 and 30, they used the high school gym at that time to play basketball in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's, I think now would be a good time to tell the story of how you got into this New York club when these guys were amazed. Tell them the story of the background of that story, because that is really good.
Yeah.
Mr. Tanner says this is one of the highlights of his, that he remembers so well, and it is quite a story. Go ahead, Frank, tell.
Well, I when I had, after I left Alliance here, I went to one of the reasons I left Alliance is when welding come in to do away with riveting and the like, and I found out I could get a job at Cleveland Crane Engineering. They wanted to swing all their product, both the tram rail department and crane department, into welded design as fast as possible, and I thought it was the thing coming thing. So I left Alliance and got this job at Cleveland Crane. Shortly after I was up there, one of the large jobs we got was for the Continental Cement people up in New York State. A welded crane for a new building they were putting up. So I had to take the drawings when we had them all designed to get them approved to New York City to the headquarters in Wall Street of the Continental Cement people for approval. And so I took them there, and their chief engineer went all over and approved them. But when we were through, a man by the name of Mr. Harrison, who was president of Continental Cement people, told the chief engineer that when they were through, well, the chief engineer was going to take us out for lunch that noon. The salesman, Mr. Jones, who was the salesman for Cleveland Crane down that area, and I were there, and he was going to take us out for lunch, but he said he had wanted to take us over to the president's office. He wanted to talk to me. Well, what he wanted to do when we got over there, he asked how the drawings was, and they're all right. And his engineer said, oh, they were real good. He approved of all of them. Well, he says, the reason I brought you over here, Mr. Tanner, he says, you're from Ohio. He says, I want to know if you have any relation, any relatives, or know any Tanners that live in Alliance, Ohio. And I says, oh, yes, I do. I says, I was born and raised in Alliance, Ohio. He says, oh, you were you? Well, he says, you don't happen to know any of the Tanner there that had the tavern in Alliance, Ohio, right down from the railroad, he says. And I says, oh, yeah, that's my grandfather. Had that grandfather, he says. And he started to guess about how old I was and the like. And he says, you could be one of the twins, could you? And I says, yes, sir, I am. And he says, well, your name is Frank. And he thought a minute, and he says, your brother's name's Homer. I says, you're right. He got up from his chair, and he come over, and he shook my hand again. He says, oh, you're the man I want to talk to, he says. Then he told this there chief engineer, I used to see this fellow when he was just a little baby running around back of his grandpa's place, so he had a playground for him back there, he says. The twins, they was twin boys, and your grandpa used to just love you boys. He had you little playgrounds back there. He says, when I first started work for a corporation, he says, and the board of directors, U.S. Steel Corporation owns the Continental Cement people too. We used to go to Pittsburgh every month to a board of directors meeting. And every other month, he says, at that time, they were building the big steel mills at Gary, Indiana, and every other month we'd stay when we were through their board of directors meeting there. He says the next day we would take a train for Gary to see how everything was going on out there. And he says that train come into Alliance, and he says you never saw a place in your life that had so damn many passenger trains sitting at the railroad station making connections with others. He says, and the train we come in there on had an hour and 20 minutes layover. So instead of sitting in the train, which we did the first time, we found out what you do when you come in there. You tell the conductor where you're going. You walk up the railroad track to the street that comes down from the square, which is, I says, Freedom Street. And he says, that's it. He says, and your granddad's place was right down just a block below there in the corner. And we'd go down there, and they told us we'd see all the businessmen around in the bar there, Mr. Tanner's place. They'd be in there getting lunches or over there. So that's what we've done. And we met some of the nicest businessmen around Alliance there in there, but we would go there. But you was just a little kid, he says, there. we'd come in there and ask Grandpa, well, how's the twins? He'd go over and look out the back window, and if he was out there playing, he'd motion us for us to come over there. He says, and I saw you play in that backyard many a time, he says, down there. So when we talked this all over, and he says to his chief engineer, you're going to take Mr. Tanner out for lunch, are you? And he says, oh, yeah. Well, he says, I'll take you out. So what he done, he took us to lunch. He took us to the New York Athletic Club, the most snooty place in the world to get into. So we had a nice lunch there and enjoyed a lot of talk and the like. And when we was through, we come back. We took quite a long time for lunch by this Mr. Harrison. He had an appointment right away, and so he had to excuse himself. He had a couple men from Wall Street that was there to the appointment too, so he excused himself. So after he went to his chief engineer, he gets up and he comes over. He says, I want to shake your hand again. He says, that's the first time I ever got in the New York Athletic Club. He says, I've been on this job for 19 years as chief engineer, been trying to get in that place ever since. So now I made it.
That's a real good story. Let's go back now to where you were telling me at one time about the Wyatt's transfer, and that you and your brother used to make some money, and they used to pay you in fruit and things like this for watching some of the places where the customers would come in and get this produce.
The grocery stores in Alliance, they used to have in Canton the wholesale groceries. One was called the Canton Supply Company, and I just don't remember, but all the grocery stores used to get their, practically all their groceries from this Canton Supply Company. And the railroad car, they'd come a whole carload of groceries, everything at the grocery store come in, or a whole carload. Then they'd hire a drayman from town here with his horse and wagon, and these would all be boxed up in there with the grocer's name on, and generally the salesman would come over here, he'd be here too, and they'd load these into this whole car that was set there in a siding right off of Freedom Street there, just west of Freedom Street on the railroad. There was a siding there, and the car would rest there. And while they were delivering around town, which took them maybe a half a day to deliver to the different stores around town, their vegetables and groceries and all that stuff, why, Homer and I, they used to hire us to watch the car when they weren't away there. Sometimes we'd get up and set in the car, or sometimes just set outside, but watch it so nobody get in the car and the like. And during especially vacation time when we were little kids in grade school and the like, they'd hire us, and maybe they'd give us a half dozen bananas and a sack full of oranges and stuff like that. And that's what they'd hire us for, give us stuff like that. We supplied our family there for a number of years with all the vegetables and fruit that we needed. We had quite a little bit in our basement. We had a cool basement where we lived, our North Street there, and we had all that kind of supplies we could use for us watching out these. That was really a good pay, we figured, just like that. We never got any money from them. We just got the, they'd give us some of these, some oranges and some lemons and maybe half a dozen bananas and stuff like that. We thought that was real good pay and the like. Her mother, she knowed where we was at, and we come home with some vegetables or some fruit.
Well, you were really enterprising boys. Tell us now about your newspaper, Kerry, and especially about going to see Matthew Early and down that direction.
Oh, yeah. Well, and before we were clear into high school, and for several years after we was into high school, well, the first 2 years, we carried Cleveland presses. We had a press route, home and I each did. And we carried Cleveland presses. They used to come in on a 3:30 train from Cleveland. Everybody here called it the press train that come down, because there were several different boys had press routes where they had them town. But Homer and I, we each had a press route we did. But then we transferred the papers that come in there. We had a little wagon that we kept down in the baggage room of the Stark Electric streetcar, and we go down there and we had a bundle of presses for different places we put on the streetcar. See, one we sent one to Sebring, and one to Damascus, and one to Beloit, and one to Salem, one to Station A, which is put it on the streetcar run up to Mount Union, and another one to Maximo. And we had them bundles of papers at each one, and then also in our bundle of paper we got, we had extra papers. We took these. They had stamps on them that they got from the streetcar people. It cost so much, and we had to put them stamps on the bundles. And then also in our bundle of papers we got, we had some extras that we put them on the streetcar. Then we give the conductor and the motorman each extra paper for handling them. Them extras was in our bundle, so we take them up and put on the streetcar going down to Sebring and Beloit, Damascus. We put the bundle of papers each one, and to give the conductor, the motorman, give him two papers, one for him and what's the name. And then we done the same thing for Mount Union, which is called Station A, and then also we sent him over to Maximo, or to Louisville and Maximo too. We did. So we, for a number of years, we done that. And which was quite a quite a thing. And we got, I don't remember what it was, we got paid for that by the Cleveland Press. But anyway, it supplied Homer and I when we were a couple of years there in school and the like. We had more money to spend than pretty many kids around town. We did, because it wasn't a real big amount of money, but at that time it meant something.
Well, on your paper, Ralph, you told me that Matthew Early was one of your customers. Well, can you tell us a little bit about him? He was, yeah, I know he was a politician, and
I had this Cleveland Press route. I had several merchants on Main Street up to the square. I went up square, and I had three or four different business places. Then I went down to the square, down Freedom, and I went down across, and my route run down Freedom Street, clear down to Park. I had customers around, and I went down Park to Early's there. He was always sitting, he got a Cleveland Press, and he was always sitting in that nice big chair on the porch waiting for me to come along, and I'd go up and hand him a press, talk a few minutes with him, and then I'd go over and my route, and I went over past his place to North Union, out North Union to Gaskell, over Gaskell Street to the Waterworks, and then I went out to Webb a little bit, or not Webb, I don't know, Liberty, isn't it? No, it is Rock Hill, over Rock Hill, and then out Webb. Anyway, at the Waterworks, I went out a couple of houses out beyond there, then come back up there to North Freedom, and up North Freedom home, where Webb Street, you know, hits North Freedom there, to come up Webb and home.
So
And that was my paper route. But Early was practically every night he was sitting on his front porch waiting on the Cleveland Press.
Was his wife still living at that time, or had she died, you know?
Oh, I don't believe she, I don't remember her at all.
Well, I think she died in the late 90s, so I imagine she was gone.
It was around that time that this lady started to live there with him and look out for him. What was her name? She was a school teacher.
Was that Gwendolyn?
Huh?
Was that Gwendolyn Hartzell?
No.
It was somebody older than this.
What was that lady?
There was a lady. There's always been a little mystery that we have a picture of Lucy Early, and we cannot place where this lady belongs. It is not, wasn't Matthew's mother. But whether it was an aunt or somebody else. Mabel was there, and then Gwen, yeah, her sister, did live there for a while, yeah, with them, but I don't know at what time.
Well, it was during that time they were there of the time.
Yeah. Well, Mabel.
That's what Mabel Hartzell.
Mabel was there.
Yeah.
They adopted her when,
yeah,
she was about 11 years old.
Yeah.
And so she would have been there, yes.
Yeah, she was in and out of there. And
right. Well, he graduated from high school in 1995.
He generally was sitting right there in the porch waiting for the paper because he enjoyed his Cleveland Press.
Well,
I could always remember, I could see when I was a block up street, see him still sitting there, see, waiting on it.
Well,
but he was nice. But he certainly enjoyed his. I think he read clear through that paper before he moved off the porch.
Well, he was a politician, and he was a rather well-to-do man. And in comparison to that time, the home that he built as the Alliance Museum now is a show place, and is still a beautiful home.
They got that big chair sitting in there that he used to sit out there with. I remember when I was down there, it's been several years ago, I was down there, and I remember that chair is sitting in there that he used to sit out there in the porch with.
Well, I know what you're talking about this, because remember, I copied a picture of him and his wife sitting on the porch out there. And just recently, I got another picture of him from down at the museum there, and he's got on a high top silk hat, and he had banners and things like this around his door, so it's